and welcome back to Power Suit Podcast. I'm delighted to have another well-known name from the creative industries joining me today. I'm here in the studio with renowned photographic agent Jermaine Walker, who represents image makers such as David Vintner, Hannah Moore Finch and Charlie Clift. You might have seen some of their work recently for Uber or photographing people like Olivia Colman. Loads of cool stuff coming out of the agency. It's a mixture of young artists and established artists, anywhere from their personal projects through to commercial work for things like magazines, creative agencies and direct clients. Jermaine has been in the image-making business for over 20 years now, starting off as a photographer herself before later starting her own business as an agent. Her agency is based in a lovely building in Stockwell in South London, and they work with clients from all over the globe, so it's Jermaine's job to know absolutely everybody. So without further ado, welcome Jermaine.
Thank you very much. What a lovely introduction.
Oh, good. So I know you've now been running your own photographic agents for a number of years, but can you take me all the way back to the start of your career? What was your first ever job?
Oh, gosh, goodness me, that's a long, long time ago. To be quite honest, I think even when I was a teenager, I was probably unemployable. And I think the only proper PAYE job I had was working in an old people's home, looking after the elderly, which I loved very, very much. And it was a fantastic job, but it wasn't where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do. So I very quickly moved on from there. When I was 16, I was lucky enough to get a scholarship to go to the States. And I went to California to finish off my final 2 years at school there. And I lived with a great family who were amazing. And it was such a shock to go from Birkenhead to Los Angeles. And it was probably the thing that made me decide that I wanted to go down a photographic route rather than to stay in Birkenhead and do what everybody else did up there.
Yeah, well, it was also because the light in LA is amazing, I think.
Amazing. Absolutely and utterly breathtaking. And the opportunities that I got there from the family were very wealthy. I've learned how to fly a little plane. We went scuba diving, we went swimming, we went horse riding, we did absolutely and utterly everything. So it was, for me, quite a phenomenal experience that, you know, not many people get the opportunity to do that. What I think was more important was that the school had so many facilities that I didn't even realise that were available to people. They had a printmaking, they ran a monthly magazine, they had editors, they had photographers. And I went into the department and I asked them if somebody, you know, if I could learn how to print, which of course they said yes. And they taught me how to print. And then I asked if I could shadow one of their photographers. So that's exactly what I did. And after my time in the States, I came back home. And I said to my mum, I really want to go to college to learn about photography. And my mum said, well, why don't you go and work for the local wedding photographer and just see what that is like, which is exactly what I did. And I was the tea girl there. And I did that for 3 months until I met one of their other photographers who freelanced for them, who said, Jermaine, go and learn how to do this properly. And that's when I went off to college.
Oh, wow. And then did you manage to get paid work quite quickly, or you expected to work for free initially?
As a photographer?
Yeah.
I did 3 years at college with a year out doing industrial release at Shell at their research centre, which was fascinating. I did film up there, and again, it was a very nurturing place to work. They looked after me very, very well, and they gave me so many opportunities. You know, I will be forever grateful to my boss up there, Fred, who pushed me and let me do as much as I possibly could. When I finished at Shell, they offered me a full-time job, and I was very, very tempted to take it, but all my friends from college had all moved down to London and they all said, Jermaine, come to London, the streets are paved with gold. So I packed my bag and I went off to London. I didn't have a job to go to or anything like that, but I thought, well, I'll just do the assisting thing, which everybody else was doing. Mm. And I worked for a couple of nice photographers, and then there was a whole patch of really, really terrible people to work with. And within 12 months, I thought, I'm not made out. I can't do this any longer. I hate being a photographer's assistant. I hate everything about the industry. I found it was absolutely unkind and brutal.
I already know one of these yeah. stories. You don't have to name any names, but love you to tell me about the worst one.
Yeah, it wasn't the worst one, but it was an interesting one. Quite early on, I was freelancing for an American photographer who was in the UK doing a Coca-Cola shoot, and all the crew had worked for him before, and he had a reputation. However, you know, I was pretty naive, and I will roll my sleeves up and work as hard as anybody else, which is what I did. We did our big shoot. The end of the shoot, he shouted at me, "Get me a ladder." So I got a big ladder. I didn't know why. And then he said, "Get me the megaphone." I got the megaphone. I had no idea why. And he yelled, "Get the suitcase." And I did that. He climbed to the top of the ladder with his megaphone and with the suitcase of money. And he shouted, "The eagle is gonna shit." And I thought, what is going on? And he opened the case and he threw all the money out. And people just scrambled and picked up the money as it fell to the floor. And I just stood there aghast at what was going on. You know, I'd never seen anything like this in my life. Anyway, come the end of the week, I asked him if he'd pay me. And he said, "If you didn't pick it up, it's your own bloody fault. You're stupid." And I didn't get paid. So it was a tough lesson to learn, but an interesting one. I worked for this guy for about 6 months. And to be quite honest, it nearly broke me. He was a very difficult character. And I decided after about 6 months, I couldn't do any more. I handed in my notice. I went to the Association of Photographers and I was just having a coffee with them. And I said, "I don't think I'm cut out for being a photographer or a photographer's assistant. I'm just not cut out for it." And at that point, a photo agent walked in and he needed somebody to help him out on a big production that he had, and he just needed a bit of support. So I stepped into that, and that was a fantastic period of time working with this guy, learning the ropes. Again, somebody who was kind, who was caring, who was nurturing, and was prepared to put in a little bit of effort and a lot of love just to show what the business can offer. And I stayed with him for quite a while. And then I decided that I knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to represent photographers. And from that point on, that's exactly what I've done.
Amazing. So you knew that you wanted to represent photographers, but did you know how you wanted to approach it? Did you feel that there was something missing in the market, or how did you kind of leap into it?
I think it's like most things that I do, my heart's on my sleeve. I'm pretty straightforward and I'm pretty simple about my approach and what I do. And I just thought, I love photography. I love the whole idea of photography. But I knew I was never going to be a good enough photographer to be able to create images like that. But nevertheless, I can still appreciate them. And I thought, if I can contribute to allow other people to do that in a supportive role, then it's the closest thing I can do to being a photographer. And working with the first agent I worked with, he taught me how to look at portfolios, what should go in, what shouldn't go in, what clients expect to see, what creatives expect to see. And it's all very, very different what people's expectations of what a portfolio should do. And, you know, as I went on and I learnt more about my craft, you get a feel for which photographer's going to do well and possibly which aren't, or sometimes which photographers are going to do well, but it's going to take a lot longer for them to get to that point. Some photographers you take on, you rejig their folio and they fly. And other photographers, you do all that work and nothing happens. And sometimes it can take 18 months for people to go, "Oh, look at that." Mm. And who knows why that happens. But that's the reality of the business.
So when you've signed somebody, it can sometimes take quite a long time for that to sort of get off the ground, because presumably you need to sort of tout them about and, you know what I mean, slightly pimp them out, don't you?
You do need to pimp them out. But before you even get to that stage, photographers or filmmakers come to you with a huge back catalogue of work. And generally, they're coming to you because they know that they can do more and they're not getting the jobs that they think that they should be getting or would like to get. And sometimes when they first turn up, they show you a portfolio of work and you can be a little bit like, yeah, this is like everybody else's work and it really isn't doing it for me. And then you just say, have you got anything else? And they might show you just a few pictures on their iPhone or something like that. And you go, that's what we're talking about. That's much more interesting than what you're showing me here. Mm. And then they'll go, oh, really? OK, I've got lots and lots of stuff. Let me send you that. And then I'll come back in a week's time and we'll have another discussion. So I think photographers, when they put together a commercial portfolio, they sometimes can make it feel a little too commercial and a little bit soulless. I think that's very, very easy to do. The other big mistake the photographers regularly make is they'll have a couple of shots in there that are really, you know, why have you got these in here? And they'll go, oh, no, but the experience, you know, what happened that day was wonderful. This was great and that was great. And they give you all the backstory. But that doesn't really work when you're just looking at a picture.
Yeah.
You've got to assess the picture for what it is. And when the portfolios go out to certain people, there might be nobody there to tell the story. So if the picture doesn't work, if the image doesn't work on its own, it shouldn't really be in the portfolio.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So on to other advice you would have for photographers looking to get represented by an agent to sort of take their work forward. Would you have other suggestions, either in terms of how they put their portfolio together or how they approach agents?
All agents are different. Everybody has got their USP, how they like to put portfolios together, how they like the work to be printed, what they expect in a folio. So I might get somebody who I think is absolutely amazing and I'll go, oh, I think you should do this, this and this. And they think I'm talking pants and they'll go to somebody else and go with somebody who works for the way that they want to work. So you don't always get the people that you want. And to be quite honest, I think that's right. It's good because it's no good thinking somebody's work is amazing, but they don't believe in what you're saying and they don't want that advice or they don't appreciate that advice. So it is better that they go to somebody else who is more suitable for what they want.
Mm.
Now, I'm pretty opinionated and I am a little bit of a control freak. And of my photographers, I want people who are enthusiastic, hardworking, can roll up their sleeves, are not frightened to jump in and commit and do work. I also think loyalty, and I want people who will work as a team, that we become a team. I don't want people who are islands and don't want input and, you know, just do their own thing regardless of what's ever said. I'm a great believer in collaboration, and if we can collaborate together well, it shows through right away. I will say to my young photographers, or any of my photographers, once they've got their portfolios, once we're happy with how they're looking and what we've got on the website, and also sometimes you've got to coach them a little bit because they start telling you about the work and they get so in depth about the atmosphere and the story behind it that sometimes you can turn off a little bit and they have to learn how to judge what other people are thinking and possibly skip over a few details and just make things a little bit quicker and a little less intense.
But that makes a lot of sense that the photography, it can be quite sort of isolated job. So it kind of makes sense that sometimes you get these characters that become more and more stuck in their ways is too harsh a term, but like doing their own thing.
They become really isolated.
But yeah, I guess that's why it's very important that someone sort of joining your roster is up for a bit of change.
I think it's really, really important. A photographer would not be going to an agent if they were making all the money that they wanted to make and doing jobs in the way that they wanted to do them. They wouldn't need us. And the reality is we are here because we're really, really needed. And I wish there were more agents out there because we offer a service that, one, is needed, two, is desperately called for, and three, advertising agencies really, really do rely on us for an awful lot of input when we're producing big shoots. And without a shadow of a doubt, we will get more money for the photographer than they will get on their own. And I will always say to the photographer that you have to trust me. There are some jobs that we will do and the budgets might not be very good for the love of it, for a great client, or for a wonderful idea or a worthy cause. So that those are all really good, valid reasons if the money isn't good on a job. And, you know, I would recommend all photographers analyse why they take on a job. It always should be because they're going to do a great image or because they're going to be paid really, really well. Now, there are an awful lot of jobs out there where the creative is not great. It's just a bit of ripshit and bustle work. And there's a lot of that. And I'm not belittling anybody. It's just the nature of the beast. And there are some big clients who want global campaigns. And, you know, they might start off telling you, oh, well, we've got no money. But whereas a photographer might get cold feet, we will be very, very precise about what the fee includes and how much usage they can have. And yes, of course, they can always have more usage if they want to find a little bit more budget. And generally, I find if we negotiate on behalf of the photographers, we're more than likely to get at least 30% more for them, if not far, far more than that. And we also, one thing I think we'll probably touch on again in a minute, is the usage element. Mm. And photography is all, fees are all based around a few items. How many shots are you doing? What is the media? If the media is big, i.e. if it's OOH, which stands for out of home, and that could be the posters on the street, it could be any of that sort of stuff that you see when you're out and about on the side of a bus, you know, in a taxi, all that sort of things. If it's press, or if it is, now clients are really, really good at saying, oh, it's only going to be used on a website. Mm-hmm. Now, online media over the last, 10, 15 years has gone from a little tag on that nobody charged anything for to now a major media. So photographers need to be really, really aware that their work has value. And I also think we should start educating young people, even people who are doing their GCSEs in photography, and also university students, that an image has a value and it belongs to them. It is their pension. It is what may support them when times are tough. Nobody can work 24/7. There are times when even the best, healthiest photographer has a headache or somebody in their family is not well. And there are times when people need to take time off through no fault of their own. And if you can get your catalogue of images to work without you having to photograph, I think that is a wonderful thing. And I am very, very proud that over the years we have been able to do that for all our photographers.
What sort of thing do you mean in terms of getting the photos to work without the photographer being present? So do you mean in terms of kind of selling their images to be used?
Could be that. It's all about usage. So you might have a client who says, OK, we're going to commission you and we'll pay you 5 beans. And to do this shot, we're only going to use it for 6 months online. And then you're on holiday in Spain and you see it's a poster campaign all over Spain. It's in the airports. It's on the back of buses. It's everywhere. And none of this usage has been negotiated. So I would always take pictures of it, make sure the metadata is in all of those so nobody can argue with the dates. And I would go back and go, oh, to the client, oh, I've just realised this is happening and we only agreed this. And they're always shocked, they're always surprised, and they'll always go, oh, we never realised, oh, that's interesting, oh, yes. And then you generally find that it's not only that image, but another 20 of your shots that are also being used, but they're being used in America and, you know, they can be used all over the world.
Does that happen a lot then?
Huge amount.
And still?
Still. An absolute huge amount. And clients will normally just put their hands up and go, okay, fine, we'll pay you. Occasionally they will say, we're not paying you. And what are you going to do about it? And then you have a choice. But if you end up going to court with one of the big clients, I always say take 2 spades because you're going to have to dig 2 graves. Nobody gets out of it uninjured. I think really to sum up what is so important for all photographers, and I am absolutely and utterly passionate about this, photographers need to know how to write a quote and how to take that information that is agreed with the client and put it on their invoice. And part of that information, which is their contractual information, i.e. this is only going to be used for web usage, it's 4 shots and it's only going to be used in the UK for 1 year, that information then goes onto your invoice. So it's on all your paperwork. It follows the job throughout. Whoever comes in, not in my books, nothing should be put verbally. Everything needs to be put in writing. So when your best friend, who's no longer at that agency and doesn't really give a damn whether, you know, you're being paid for your job or not, when they've gone and somebody else is in there who doesn't care, you can always say, but look, it's all in writing here.
Yeah, so you've got the paper trail.
You've got the paper trail, put it in writing and just make sure that you as photographers or artists ring fence what you do and you do not give your images away. You know, I have images that we've sold for one-off usage and we've got £20,000 and £30,000 for them. One-off for big usage. And if you haven't done any jobs in 6 months, that is a godsend. Photographers don't work 7 days a week. Photographers do big projects and then nothing. And then they'll do a bit of folio stuff and then they might do a few small projects. So even though the rewards can be amazing, when you even it all out, to be quite honest, I don't think you're being paid any more than any middle to heavyweight person in an ad agency. You are getting similar fees.
But I suppose you have to be resilient enough to deal with those kind of highs and lows of kind of intensively working and then maybe not doing very much for, say, a couple of months or, I guess, anywhere up to a few months.
Absolutely. I think that is the hardest thing for a photographer. You know, you work on a big project and it can be 4 months out of your life. And then all of a sudden, you go from me being on the phone 24/7 and clients chasing you and model agencies and this, that and the other to nobody calling you, you know. And all of a sudden you think, what have I done wrong? What's gone wrong? And it's not a case like that. And I always say to photographers, you've also got to be a good publicist. And if you can't do that yourself, then employ somebody a day a week or 2 days a week to who can send out those emails saying to clients, hey, look what I've done. Can I come in and show you my new portfolio when I get back from running around the world doing this campaign? And those sort of things are really, really important. Really, really important. Photographers should not rely on their agent to do all their marketing. They should have a marketing strategy that runs in conjunction to what their agent is doing.
Do you think some agents do some of the marketing of the people that they represent? Or like, how does that tend to work?
We do a huge amount of the marketing of the photographers that we represent. However, I can tell a client until I'm blue in the face that they're an ace photographer. They'll love working with them. And all it takes is that photographer to sit there, have a coffee or a beer with them, and they go, oh, God, they're really great, Jermaine. Why didn't you tell me? And you think, gosh, I've been telling you for 12 months. And sometimes all it takes is that one meeting. And if the personalities click, then it isn't a hard sell for us. It helps if they're a good person. It really, really does. Because arrogance in this business, I've seen it, and it really is very unpleasant to deal with, really unpleasant. And I don't know in the climate that we have now whether there's much space for those sort of things. Yeah. And I come back to the point that I made earlier, whereas people, photographers who support you and you can support them and you work collaboratively, you get much further with that.
If you're like... Yeah, for other people that work across the creative industries and don't know much about what it means to be an agent and would maybe consider it, what does it tend to entail as a job?
I think there are a few elements that you've got to have. I always say the first one is how you treat your photographers. So you've got to have a bit of compassion. You've got to want to see them succeed. You've got to want to work with them and support them and encourage them. If you want a steady income, don't become a photographer, because your income will never be, you know, steady with a 2% increase or a 5% increase every year. It's not how it works. There will be years when you will earn a lot of money, and there will be years when you earn nothing. And I'm not being dramatic when I say that. That is the reality of the beast. And if we are able to get a good usage for a photographer and or re-license some of their images, and sometimes, you know, I was saying earlier that the one image that we re-license, I think we sell for £25,000, and that was very recently. And another set of relicensing we did, we got over £600,000 for. Now,
God.
When you do things like that, I always say to the photographer, if you go out and buy a Ferrari or something like that, I don't want to see you again, because a year's time, 2 years' time, you might have no work and you might desperately need that money. So you need to do whatever you can to ring fence funds that will see you through when the times are bad. So you have to be, I am not a financial advisor, but you certainly have to give your photographers a few pointers as to what to do. Mm. When times are good, it's easy, you know, it's very, very easy. Everybody's on a bit of a high. When times are bad, that's when, you know, they might need a lot of support and they might need a lot of encouragement. I often feel that I'm a bit of a mum to all of them. And there are times, sometimes at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, your phone goes off and I end up taking a call and just checking that people are okay and things are as they should be. It happens. And I feel very responsible for all of them.
I can't really imagine that happening in anything I've worked in, but I guess it is that kind of close collaborative, like, working relationship that to be their confidant. Well, in the sense that you're the person helping build their confidence when they're having those lulls between jobs. So you have to be kind of their everything.
Yes. I mean, it's easy to be there for the good times. The bad times are harder. And it is making sure they see what the purpose is, that they that there is a strategy and you're all working towards the strategy.
And would an agent also need to have a lot of sort of production skills in terms of being able to, what would you say are kind of important? What skills would you say are important for the producing side?
I think going, just taking the production to one side for a moment. So our skills that we need as agents are towards our photographers. Then we also need the skills towards the people who are commissioning us. So whether that is a direct client, a marketing department, or whether that is an ad agency and it's a creative or somebody from their production department. So we need to be able to deal with all of these people, and we have to deal with them on different levels. We will deal with, for example, an art director or a creative director from a creative point of view. Whereas if we're talking to possibly somebody who is sorting the finances out on the job and is holding the purse strings, we might have to take a different tone and approach them in a slightly different way to make sure that they understand all the reasons why we need the budget that is needed. It's easy. The creators will always say, oh, I don't care what it costs, as long as we get X, Y, and Z. And to get those funds to allow us to do what they want, sometimes you've got to push a little bit. So on top of that, then we come to the production. And not all agents produce. An awful lot of agents will only do the sales and looking after their photographers. So we do the production. And again, I think this comes simply down to me being a bit of a control freak and wanting to make sure we get the best possible job capable within budget, where there are no hiccups, nothing, no surprises. Everything runs on time to budget and all of that sort of thing. So we produce all or 90% of our photographers' work around the globe. And, you know, we've worked everywhere from Hackney to Scotland to the other side of the world, to Tasmania, to Australia, to the Far East, to the Americas, South Americas, Mexico. And again, when we work abroad and we're producing big jobs abroad, big commissions, I work with people who I know will support us, who understand the way I like to work, how I want this to be a fantastic experience for the creatives. If you're taking them around the world somewhere where they may never get the chance to go, you want to make sure that that is something, A, that they'll remember for their lives, and B, that you can get the best possible images out of that job. Many years ago, I was lucky enough to spend 12 months going up the Amazon and living with the Indians on the Amazon, and it was an amazing experience. And the local guides who I went with, I have stayed in touch with for all these years. And a couple of years ago, I was approached by Sony, and they asked me to do some shots for the launch of a new camera. They asked me to pitch an idea, and I just thought, well, wouldn't it be great to take a crew into the jungle and go up the Amazon and go for a week of hunting? And, you know, and I thought, I wonder if this is safe. I wonder if it's feasible to do. So again, I just got back in touch with the guys that had done this for me, spoke to a few other people, and we put it together. And we had the most wonderful 8-day shoot out there. And when everybody got back on the plane, there were just tears, because they just said, this is an experience of a lifetime. Wow. And I just think, if we can do that, and, you know, you don't have to go as far as the Amazon, you can do that in Bognor, you know, just make it a pleasant experience. Not everything has to be done in a sterile environment. I think if you can bring a bit of joy and a bit of niceness into it, it goes much further.
Yeah, well, because it'll be, you'll see in the output, won't you?
I think you do.
Brilliant. And yeah, how do people end up in the industry? How do people end up being an agent? Is there a sort of typical route into it or not really?
I think you have many, many options. I think what you need more than anything is a passion for photography. And I think if you've got that passion for photography and a willingness to learn, you can come into this business from anywhere. When I first moved to London, I employed a hairdresser because she had the most wonderful skills with people. She could sit there and chat to anybody. And I was just mesmerised by this person who could just do this so simply, so easily, without there being any effort involved. And even though she moved on to other jobs past me, we've always stayed in touch and she's still in the business and working amazingly hard. But I think the key things that you need to be to come into this business is have an eye for photography, enjoy it. You've got to be a positive, upbeat person, and you've got to be prepared to roll up your sleeves. You know, there are jobs that I have done in this business that have been really, really tough. We did a photo shoot on the beach and the client decided they didn't like the angle, so we had to shoot a different angle, which meant taking all the sand off the beach and wheelbarrowing it up onto a different part, which was all of course covered in stone. And I ended up moving something like 70 ton of sand. And once the shot was done, clients were happy and went home. I put it all back in the wheelbarrow and put it back on the beach.
Oh my God.
So, you know, there are times when you've got to do these things that you're not quite expecting, but to do it with sort of a bit of niceness in your heart is always a positive thing.
That's mad about the beach story. That sounds a bit like not quite the Emperor's New Clothes, but I mean, it's... Yeah, you talk about sort of moving heaven and earth for someone.
Oh,
but
yes.
That's extreme.
Oh, yes. It's absolutely and utterly extreme. Some of the things, you know, crazy things that you get asked for.
God.
Crazy things. I think you've got to be able to stay current. You have got to have, be one who likes to go to exhibitions, look at films, look at magazines, just get inspiration from what's around you and be able to articulate that to other people, because people like to hear what inspires you and what you like and why you like it. I also think you need to be somebody who's not stuck in their ways. You need to be able to challenge yourself. And if we're going right one day, be prepared to go left the next. I think that's really, really important. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. Mistakes are brilliant. I love mistakes because putting them right shows people that you really, really care. And as long as you don't make that mistake again and you own up to it and the job is salvageable, people will always remember that you were the one who made it right. And I always think that's a good thing to be. Last but not least, get stuck in. Don't be afraid to jump in and get soaking wet and have an absolute blast. It is a wonderful, wonderful career. And I think it's a career that is really suitable for women because women have an ability to sense things before they even happen. And 9 times out of 10, they don't even need to be told to do things. They're already doing it before things happen. And if you're that sort of a person, you'll fly in this business.
Amazing. Thank you. And then listeners know that I tend to always ask, 30 years ago, had all those ups and downs of the 80s, and we're now in sort of similarly turbulent times. And I make people, I make my podcast interviewees tell me where you think things are going to be in another 30 years from now. Where do you think things might move towards in photography?
Well, the recession in the 80s was pretty damn brutal. And if I'm really, really honest about it, there were weeks, probably even months, and possibly even the odd half a year where I thought, oh my God, will I survive this? It was very tough. Nobody was spending any money. Nobody wanted anything. And illustration was much cheaper. So that was an obvious thing for clients to go down. And then we had the digital revolution, which was terrifying and fantastic. And The sad thing about that was we lost a huge amount of photographers who were not prepared or didn't want to change to the new technology. We embraced it and we went back to school and we taught ourselves, we did night school and we did all of those things. Now, where are we? Where is this business going? It's scary, but it's also really quite exciting. Because of digital and because photographers are now shooting moving image and a lot of content, we are no longer just shooting what people 5 years ago used to call a moving still. TV departments were very, very derogative about photographers' ability to shoot anything that moved. Those days are going, and I have to say, bring it on. I cannot wait, and I am in there and pushing for us to do the moving image. We can do it at a fraction of the price because we're not unionised. We are hands-on. We're not working with 90, 100 men crew. We're small and we will just get on and do it. And I think that is where our next challenge lies. And I think the hardest people who are finding this the hardest in the industry are the ad agencies, because they are still holding on to the old ways and do not want to move on to this way. But I think in the end, they will. And I just think it will take a little bit of time to get there. And the more we have so many direct clients coming to us and asking us to produce this content, and we've done the odd TV commercial and things like that, the more that gets out, the happier I am. And I just think it is really, really exciting times. I think technology is going to do leaps and bounds. I think we will be able to personalise all our stuff in the future. And I think possibly there probably won't even be, you know, a paper end result. Everything will be beamed directly onto our retinas from a chip that we've got somewhere. And it will be exactly probably what we want to see. So, you know, I think that's probably where it's going, down to more personalised content.
Mm. And then slightly nearer future, what's next for Jermaine Walker as a business?
Moving image, moving image, moving image. We've just taken on the lovely Josh XL, and he has got some fantastic film under his belt, as has Stephen Fisher. And we are quoting on some great projects that my fingers are very, very tightly crossed about. And hopefully over the next 6 to 12 months, all of this will fall into place.
Wow. Really exciting times then.
Yeah.
So my very last question then is, where can people find you?
Well, we've got a lovely little studio over in Stockwell, which is 4 Union Road. Come by and have a coffee. Or go onto the website, www.jermaine.co.uk, and pick up all our social media there.
Brilliant. Yeah, it's been fascinating hearing these stories, Jermaine. Thank you so much for joining today.
Thank you very much for asking me. I appreciate it.
This has been Powersuit Podcast, and I've been your host, Lauren Ingram. If you like what you hear, tell your friends, or even better, tell your friends on the internet about the podcast and spread the love. Thank you for listening.